Blog Talk Radio.
Sonic Effects on this the 29th of May 2016. It's only 22 days until the summer solstice. Here in this kind of climate, we treasure our summer weather. Do you know there are only 93 days, 15 hours, and 47 minutes of summer here? Yeah. Progress and change, it always happens. Fall begins in 116 days and 4 hours from now. Think about it, it's all good. I hope you've been doing well this past week, cloaked in the secrecies of mysteries, I guess, of Freemasonry, committing acts of random Masonic kindness wherever and whenever you can, and doing it as obscurely as you possibly can, a little stealth. It seems to make it all that much better. So we welcome you with a little West End Blues, J. Oliver, 1924. But it was Brother Louis Armstrong blowing the horn on that. We think one of the first horn solo pieces, yeah, that was ever recorded. That was our innovator, Brother Louis Armstrong. This is at a time when he was putting up with, you know, the expression, his music, jazz, his expression, the individual, the creativity. And he's doing it in an environment of oppression. Of course he was. Couldn't eat with his white musician cast members, band members, subject to racial slurs, at least in North America, at least in his home country. And yeah, I did spend some time here and spent more time in Europe, where he was wildly successful and well received. Life goes on. Now he's revered, isn't he? Just revered. I could listen to him and think about the inspiration of the fellow that prevailed. Today, we have some interesting business. I think an inspirational message for listeners. Not that we are ever too doom and gloom. We try to be add a little bit of reality, move a little bit beyond the emotional discussion, the emotional management, and think about our ancient churches. Give us some pretty profound instruction and guidance, and maybe protocols. Teach us the process, I believe, and many of you do. Teach us in those kind words, in those different paragraphs, the essence of what it meant to be a Mason in the day. I think that travels better through time than any of the other things that we've tried to achieve. We've now, the plant that was seeded so long ago is no longer a seed. It's full grown, hundreds of years old. And, you know, what, about 400 years old? Maybe a little later, a little less than that. But it's reached fruition in many places. And we can only stand back now and try and grasp what it is that this plant, what is it? It's grown. We still, I think, are sometimes in awe. And we hear that and we see that in those conversations. What is it? Well, that's one of the essential questions, because that's a lead into who we are. Who am I? What's my purpose? Is this the vehicle to help me in some way? Well, we have to think through a lot of questions before we get to that point. I'm going to, it's summer in the air here. We're it's a fairly early morning where I am. I'm not sure what time of day you're thinking about this. I just feel compelled to get into a little bit of summer-ish kind of music from my boyhood. Hope you don't mind. I'll be right back with a really interesting commentary about how to use the mysteries to touch the potential of accepted Freemasonry. How do we get there? Think about this incredible potential. Yeah, it's all there in front of us, isn't it? And what do we do with it? Oh my goodness. Here, check this out.
Aruba, Jamaica, ooh, I wanna take you. Aruba, Bahama, come on, get it, mama. Key Largo, Montego, baby, why don't we go? Jamaica, off the Florida Keys. There's a place called Kokomo. That's where you wanna go to get away from it all. Body in the sand, tropical kiss, nothing in your hand. We'll be falling in love to the river, mother steel from down in Kokomo.
A little more uplifting like that. Yeah, I know it's kitschy, but you know, sometimes you go with what's popular. How do we go from that to something more thoughtful and contemplative? Well, it's our starting point today. It is. We have a wonderful opportunity, and this is what I mean about the mysteries. Let's assume that life is a series of choices, and then living with the consequences of those choices. Let's assume what we learn from those consequences determines if we live a good life. A good life, we are told by the philosophers, by the Greek, is a life examined. I think the saying goes, a life unexamined is not worth living. I don't think that's harsh. I think that's practical. If you're ever wondering why we pursue these types of discussions, it's because it gives meaning to our life. And it's important for us to examine that. What's the consequence of that examination? Well, isn't that up to you? Are you thinking that moving through life is can be done without any forethought or any sense of conscience or concern for a fellow man? Well, yes, it can. There are a lot of people clamoring for that brass ring, clamoring to get there first, to get the most. The capitalist experiment is predicated on that, on the notions, the very simple notions of work and effort, risk and compensation. But again, those seeds seemed relatively forward, and it grew into something that is detached from the original design of life, of improving life for everybody. We began to understand that there were separations being created in that kind of economic model, and that there were people that weren't able to compete. At first, we pointed a finger at them and blamed them. Blaming victims has been, you know, an assault on reason for millennia. But after a time, we also had a chance for our best and brightest to examine that premise to see whether it was valid or not. And it wasn't. Oh, wouldn't it be easier if we could say that everybody that was living in despair and poor was to blame for their own situation? I've even heard in some dark places, grown men claim that it's a woman's fault if she's living in poverty, supporting her children. It's her own fault. Or, and yes, believe this or not, the abomination that babies are being born as a source of money, because there would be some aid for them. How abhorrent. No wonder Freemasonry has a role. When there's that type of thinking still happening in this country, of course Freemasons, good men, step up and explain otherwise. Thank goodness for you. But the point of the examination is to articulate our sense of morals, our sense of the awareness of the grand design, to validate. Now, if you don't need to, well, if a person doesn't need to, well, there's nothing we can do to change that person's thinking. Buddha, try as he would, showed us the way, but whether we accept that or not, whether we accepted that path is another choice. And even when you hear the wags thoughtlessly parroting that phrase about enjoying the journey, well, there's very little about the journey that's enjoyable unless that's what you're seeking, not to escape reality and escape the an and escape by creating your own illusion of your own successes. Take a realistic and frank look at the world around us in the context of our Masonic community. And we're part of all of the change that's whirling around. Today, we're going to discuss why it's important to live the values of the ancient and accepted Freemasonry if we want to reach our goal. It is important to teach our apprentices what we have given them so that they understand why they're being given. They understand the exception. What is it that they're accepting in order to be the accepted Freemason? Well, let's take a moment just to think about it. We're giving them something precious. How do you determine value? Certainly not in monetary terms. If this order does create a path to improvement, do we improve? And how do we display that to ourselves? Generally, I would think that our manner would be influenced. We would be somehow different. We would be able to follow our motto, Aude Vide Tace. We would understand the importance of listening to our apprentices. Some people who have not taken that step have felt that it's their opinions that are most sought after and most important. And as they age through Masonry, they seem to be trying to acquire the legitimacy to capture an audience. Puff in circumstance. When you have something to say, the audience will listen to you. The audience will follow you. The audience will trust you. So what is it that you have to say? And it's not whether you're articulate. Nobody is looking for this polished media presentation that we are exposed to on a daily basis. Nobody. What we're looking for is an appreciation of the idea, the articulation, the narrative, the discussion, the dialogue, the patience that it takes to learn, the awareness of that, the thoughtfulness of somebody with true insight. Now that seems to be almost, I don't think it's inescapable. You can certainly, we're not talking about the muscularity of Freemasonry. We'll save that for, some other day. And when groups of men get together, it's always that muscular kind of conversation, a little too much testosterone in the room, We're talking about the healer in you, the wise, thoughtful man in you that Freemasonry is bringing to the surface. It's not like it's planting this in you. It's nurturing what's already in you. How many times do you read that in the ritual? No need to. We're not going to certainly expose that ritual here. That would be short-sighted. Read, but read with that notion, what it's the compelling message of what you're going to find within yourself. Where are you going to find these answers? Of course, it says it's within us. We are in the image. Now, have we promoted and defined Freemasonry according to our own experience? Well, largely, yes. I don't think that's, a fault line. I think that's just the time of the season that we find ourselves rallying, pulling together. There is now a greater effort to understand the pictures in front of us. what is this? It isn't nearly as important as what is our relationship with the values of Freemasonry. That's an individual matter. We're not going to expose anybody's thinking who is struggling or is not there. Is that state of mind where there is a harmony based on an understanding of what it is that's going on around us and our role and our position day by day in the universe. This is where Freemasonry ran into some complications historically, because it could not do that, could not help a man philosophically and in terms of life balance and morals without embracing the discussion of spirituality. We're more comfortable with that than we are with religion, and we know that. Although that does not mean that every single one of us acts that way. That's of little relevance. Focus on, if you think about it, take a look at what has gone on so well in your lodge within Freemasonry. This isn't an endorsement of status quo. Come on. This is an endorsement of the dynamic with all the change. Change has to come if we're going to be relevant to the young and the new. Always, always. It happens along with a deep appreciation for the past. It's not one or the other. It is what it is. Now, I have a person that I respect tremendously who talks to me and encourages me to be patient, that the question that things and change take time to instill. And I love him for that. That he's thoughtful, he never loses his patience with me. And I have to talk with him about the thinking that I have no issue with time. I don't. There is no impatience in the world that I live in. It evolves as it's meant to. I have impatience with myself, especially when I think I'm intellectually lazy, a lazy thinker. I don't like that. I have to be the person that's accountable for commitments. Oh, and it's not that Freemasonry is life commitment. It is part of. It's an element. It's where I'm schooled. And then sometimes I go out to practice what I've learned, just to validate in some way. And then I always am drawn back. Maybe you're the same way. So to think mechanically that our engagement should be uniform and predictable, I think is really reducing a bit of a reductionist folly. That is more corporate thought than can be supported by the ancient and accepted, the ancient lessons. The ancient lessons give us a sense of manner. And so it suggests that we feel comfortable when we congregate together, and there's ways of talking with when we're with people who are not Masons. It's not, oh my goodness, let's keep the secret. It's more, let's be considerate. It's not, oh my goodness, we have something valuable and we have to handle this with all the hubris we can muster. No. Let's be sensitive. present yourself as a thoughtful man when you're with people that aren't, haven't been initiated, haven't the exception. Maybe they've reached that exception from some other means. Come on, of course that insight is plausible and possible. We have no market on that. None. The quest of insight has been before learned individuals for thousands of years. And we're so darn fortunate, so absolutely fortunate, as Buddha would remind us, and I know some of you are dabble in that, in an understanding, researching, and comparing religions. Believe nothing unless it agrees with your own reason. Sort of challenges what I've said before about people believe what they want to believe. What they want to believe may not be their reason. You know, something reasoned through. Freemasonry began around the end of the 16th century in Scotland. That's Freemasonry as we know it came into form. The Masons Lodge is where they pulled together Masons' knowledge and skill of geometry and structure in order to understand the secrets of the universe. That was the purpose of, that was the function, the reason for early Masons' lodges. To understand the secrets of the universe, applying the geometry and structure of practical Masons. That began the secret society of people dedicated to knowledge, which grew into Freemasonry. Okay? Medieval Masonry is the seed. And modern Freemasonry is the full-grown plant. Medieval Mason is doing God's work, building cathedrals and churches, God's houses. And as God is the great architect of the universe, using natural geometry, so human Masons are creating and recreating and reproduce that. They're sub-creators, in a sense, in a highly mobile, skilled, dangerous trade. The lodge was a place where the Freemasons were free to go where you like, have a place or a home away from home. It was essential. Where Masons could gather and share information and live and booze and relax after work and share hot tips and live was essential. That was our start, you and me. That was our beginning. To understand the secrets of the universe. Oh my goodness, as the plant has grown, it's had different needs. They were real. It needed to thrive. It began to realize philanthropy was more than an idea. It did. It was more than a philosophical conversation. It was real, and it was a great idea. But to achieve, to actually be able to reach out and help people, took currency. Currency. People pulling together, people willing to help, to have a sense then to define the common good. To assist the oppressed. To start to look at things in terms of constitutionally protected rights of the individual. To carry on the notions of habeas corpus. to redefine the relationship of, to each and every human being with the state. That every person, not just the gentry, not just the connected, not just the wealthy, had rights. Oh, those darn Freemasons, look what they did. They took a system that was so proper and made it all murky. It made more sense when we were governed by superstition. We were all like little sheep, all happily bleeding away. And then, son of a gun, we began to think, began to think outside of living in fear. You could only keep a mind oppressed and in fear, in a state of fear for so long before the spirit of the individual steps up. Every single time. It doesn't stop despots, and it doesn't stop the tyranny. Never does, but every single time, the strength of the individual comes forward. And it's not about ego. It's about these billions of points in the universe that are us. Each one of us, the center of our own universe. And by golly, we like being with one another. At the end of the day, we like the conversation. We like having somebody to hold the board while we saw it. We like going to somebody that has an understanding and knowledge of science that can help our child when they're sick. We like that. And in return, we do our bit to contribute to the common good, especially in this country that I'm in. It's wonderful. And we're big enough to open our borders to people that are desperate and bright and want to get ahead and make a safer life for their family. And we know we're very patient when people come with sort of outdated, you know, ancient ideas based on their culture. Our culture is not aggressive, but it's pretty hard to ignore. And you may find that you can ignore it and push back and feel all threatened, but I'll be pretty sure your grandchildren won't. Life is good. Life is good here, but we pay a price for that. You know, and we're willing. We do that willingly. We'll come back in a minute. I just want you to listen to a little bit of, this is sort of halfway between the Beach Boys and Jimmy Buffett here. We'll continue.
Thank you.
There we go again. That's you. Smooth. That's put out there for the more urbane amongst us. Yeah, just in case you think that I'm trying to talk to an audience of choir boys. So choir boys will grow up to be thoughtful men. In the meantime, they're just children. I want to talk to you about something. I want to know the challenges that you and I face. You, particularly, because you're brighter. You're much brighter. You have answers that I couldn't possibly discover. I want to talk to you about a challenge. You know, over the years, you've heard me talk about Socrates. I want a source of ideas and, you know, well-thought-out ideas. And the more you read about, you know, Aristotle and try to understand, like, what was their point? What was their nature? And then you read about Socrates and Plato, I think. And it's not just playful anymore. It's like it puzzles, makes me scratch my head and think, man, that's a point that I've discovered in the ritual of Freemasonry, in the process of Freemasonry. And so many times I feel that and I know that. And so when I'm asked, it's like I speak with some more confidence than comes out of me, because it's coming from through this test of time. That at the time when these men were walking this earth, they weren't necessarily defined as this intellectual source of reason by all. It was by some. The Athenians killed Plato, didn't they? Socrates, sorry. And then 10 years after, it was like, oh, well, my goodness, we all know about the hemlock and the unfairness of the trial. The trial was ridiculous by our contemporary standards, because the jury were hundreds and hundreds of Athenians that showed up that day. If you showed up, you were living in Athens, you were a male, and you had property, you could show up, and you could vote. And so there was hundreds and hundreds of people, and the reality is it's likely that when Socrates was defending himself, very few people actually could hear it over the din. But it was process. And then 10 years later, they were putting up monuments to him, because they realized after he was gone. Now we see, do we see the Hiram character here? The courage, knowing what's coming, or orchestrating it, or the prophet knowing what's coming and orchestrating it by negotiating with his closest friend, Judas. Oh my. We have to have a careful understanding of history. Here, let me give you a little example, and I think this is kind of, I like this just for a lot of reasons. There were a lot, even some of his most devoted disciples, who questioned the effectiveness of Socrates' educational technique. It's usually referred to as the Socratic method. Yeah. An ardent admirer, Tisthenes, founder of the Cynic school of philosophy, embarrassed Socrates. He asked why, if Socrates really believed women to be just as educable as men, he was unable to improve the temperament of his wife, Xanthippa, reputedly, now pay attention here, the most troublesome woman of all time. But this woman, whose name would become a byword for the shrew, Socrates had three sons. Through the wine haze of the symposium, Socrates good-naturedly retorted that it was precisely because of her reputation that he had married her. To test his educative talents. Just as a horse trainer shows his mettle not by handling a docile animal, so he said, if he could tame Xanthippe, he would have proved there was no one he could not mollify. These interviews persuaded Socrates that he had found the true meaning of the Delphic Oracle. He, the Delphic Oracle, is not speaking of Socrates. He is only using my name by way of illustration, as if he said, he, old men, is the wisest, who, like Socrates, knows that his wisdom is in truth worth nothing. This comes from Socrates, the Apology. Plato's Apology. So, it became his vocation to vindicate the oracle by quizzing people of all sorts and showing them that they were not as wise as they thought they were. And he explained that he had no time for public affairs or any other concern of his own and remained in poverty by his devotion to God. Aristotle, perhaps deliberately to discredit Plato's dramatic tale in the Apology, was reported to offer a much simpler explanation. He suggested it was Socrates' own visit to Delphi, where he was impressed by the inscription, Know Thyself, carved on the temple there, that inspired him to pursue his studies of the nature of man. Whatever may have been the impulse, Socrates' historic mission was the discovery of ignorance. As a young man, he seems to have shared the physicist's interest in nature. But this interest dimmed as he saw that their cosmology spawned a chaos of contradictory oversimplifications. And meanwhile, the sophists, like Protagoras and Gorgias and others, prospered not as a school of philosophy, but as teachers of the arts of persuasion and the way to success. Protagoras said he taught virtue, by which he meant the arts of succeeding in his conventional world. His famous motto, man is the measure of all things, which has become a slogan for latter-day humanism, seems to have carried a different message for him. It then expressed his doubts of the authority of the gods and affirmed a relativism that made it man's highest duty to obey the prevailing rules of the community. Gorgias was celebrated for developing the arts of rhetoric and persuasive oratory, which burdens with the rise of the Democratic Party in Athens. In these unhappy years of the Peloponnesian War, around 431 to 404 BC, the people of Athens suffered a disastrous plague, along with military defeat and the treachery of trusted leaders. With Athens' decline from the self-confident age of Pericles, the sophists were only another symptom of cynicism and the distrust of absolutes. The god of success could not satisfy a society that had so conspicuously failed in its long battle for empire. Was there perhaps some way of thought, some instrument, some resource that transcended the whims of the populace or the conceit of politicians? Could the questing mind, cleansed of pride, at least find a way to acknowledge that might be the highest permanent good? Meanwhile, could the seeking itself be a solace? Seeking our journey. Could that itself be our solace, our comfort? In later years, a number of doctrines were fathered on Socrates. One was the doctrine of forms, or ideas, which Plato attributed to him, and on which Plato built his own philosophy. this was the notion that behind every term like beauty or goodness lay the pure and changeless idea, form of an idea, accessible not to the senses, but only to the mind. What the senses perceived then seemed real only because they somehow participated in that ideal form. Aristotle also made Socrates the founder of logic. For two things may be fairly ascribed to Socrates: inductive arguments and universal definition, both of which are concerned with the starting point of science. Still, Aristotle himself doubted the applicability of scientific methods to ethics, and competing schools of philosophy had grown out of both the doctrine of forms and the method of Socratic logic. Socrates' own contribution to these ideas would be long debated and disputed, but Socrates would survive as the discoverer of ignorance, the patron saint of self-scrutiny. Ah, now Masons, you're asking, what is the connection with Pythagoras, the geometrician, the school of which no trace remains? Is there a connection? Well, yes, there is. But more of that later. So apply yourself to these teachings. Apply yourself, the discoverer of ignorance. Do we now replicate that? How do we discover, does it feel like when we discover we discover ignorance? And then apparently this leads us to self-scrutiny. It suggests that the temple is us, that Hiram, the challenge, is us. Not necromancy, although that has had a bit of flavor amongst our pundits for a while. That's just creepy. No. The idea that keeps living. You can try and kill it. Three did. They wanted the knowledge. What did our friend do? Ethically, morally, courageously. He said, no, I can't give that to you. We're going to hurt you. Well, you do what you got to do, but you're not going to. How could he impart this lesson of ignorance, the discovery of ignorance, to people that were so ignorant? Well, he couldn't. But what he gave was, what this produced was a story, a fable, a lesson about self-discovery. That no one can do that for you. You do that for yourself. Freemasonry is that opportunity. Oh, we are so hard on it. Yep. And we clamor to draw more out of it. We want to seek the knowledge. Well, the first part of that is to admit that we don't know very much. That's very humbling, oh my goodness. Can you imagine the lions of business sitting down to eat that feast? Oh, it separates out the mind from the sensation. Look at me, I drive that beautiful car. I live in that beautiful house. I vacation in beautiful places. I eat lavish, I live lavish. And yet you don't know what you don't know. And yet you don't accept the discovery of ignorance. Because, my goodness, in the real world, wouldn't that just clutter the mind? Wouldn't that just be a barrier to ambition? Well, yeah, it is. How more gentle do you need to be to help good men like you identify that part of his own being and struggle with it. But you're not alone. You are part of an enormously wonderful order. Always protect and support our Grand Lodges in their effort to preserve our constitutions. Always, always encourage and endorse and support the work of the Grand Masters. Don't look at them necessarily for their failings. That's our hubris. Look at them for the responsibility, whether they know it or not. On an individual level, they're responsible for continuity. Thank goodness. Thank God. But this other work, this is on you and me. This isn't on them. Do we want to be taught? All right. Do you want the book? Do you want to buy the CD? Well, I guess CDs are out. Fashion now. They went the way of the. Any of you out there know have any floppy disks or a computer that will run them? Well, this lesson really does require the mentor. It requires the mind. It requires the Socratic method, I think. Now, using the airwaves, is there less sensation and more awareness? Does this speak directly to your mind? These ideas that exist only in the mind, not in sensation, in the reality. And Freemasonry is of that. It exists in the mind. What is it? It's an idea. Freemasonry, and you, I know, humble men as you are, deserve that credit. And today, at least let me say right out loud that in some ways we are a celebration of life, a celebration of all that is purposeful and meaningful in a world that often seems quite confusing, because it is. We are, as we are taught, order in the midst of chaos. Not order in terms of a military regime. Oh my goodness. Do your duties. By all means, that's do your duties. But there's a mind inside of the soldier. Freemasonry is there to talk to the mind inside of the judge, inside of the doctor, inside of the philosopher, inside of the chimney sweep, the lorry driver, the clerks, the students. Is it important to understand the math? Absolutely. Keep the math in context so that all that data has meaning. It's an absolute pleasure to be with you, but our limited time is over. It's passed already. I look forward to being with you again next week. We'll carry on with the beauty of talking about the beauty of Freemasonry. Summer's coming up. Remember, there's just such a short time. While this window is opened in this season. What, 93 days we throw the window open, the summer season comes flooding into our lives, and we embrace every bit of it. And then we're going to anticipate the fall coming just 116 days from now, and the fullness of it. And then after that, winter, the beauty, the contrast, the stillness. Oh, here, where do I go? You can tell my confusion here. You know, I'm a huge jazz fan, so let's take this out with a little bit of Chet Baker, and then after that, who knows, maybe a little Beatles or Jimmy Buffett or Carole King. Thanks for joining me again. I look forward to joining you all next week. In the meantime, commit those acts of Masonic kindness. Oh, my goodness. This is called Let's Get Lost. Couldn't resist. Bit of an upside of life here. This is from 1975.
Lift me, won't you lift me above the old tree? Make it nice, make it
Very nice. Very nice.
I don't know. watching the sun bake. All of those tourists covered with oil. Strumming my six string on my front porch swing. Smell those shrimp, they're beginning to boil.
See you soon.